Hi, everybody. Welcome into a special edition of the Perth Football Podcast as part of our Casual Football Chat series. Thanks to Casual Football Co., good friends and a great supporter of our podcast. My name's Tommy Dolman, and today I'm joined by a familiar name in football here in WA, in particular on the women's side of the sport, Penny Tannerhoath. Hello, how are you?
G'day, Tom. I'm great, thank you.
Feels a bit strange, this, doesn't it? You're normally the one hosting, putting the questions to me, but we're going to turn the tables a little bit and go through your involvement in football over the years.
100%. I'm not usually on this side, just being casual and wait and see how things go.
So I suppose, first of all, you've been involved in football at pretty much every level for a number of years now, from playing, coaching, on the media side as well. How long have you had that association with the game locally for, Penny?
My first year of football was 1983. I was in high school. Melville Alemanni was my first club. We played at Len Shearer, which was Melville City Juniors back then, and is now Murdoch University, Melville. So in between, there's been some journeys elsewhere, but pretty much that's my club. I'll be there till death do we part, and that's pretty much been the development in my football, from playing to coaching to administration roles. But let's not forget, there was some soccer experience in there. You know, like, it's so old, this journey, that it was soccer there. So outside of West Australia and Australia, there's been a bit of journey as well, which is hopefully making me into a role model and an ambassador, which is the part that I love the most about what I'm doing, by the way.
We'll come on to that in a little bit more detail shortly. But was football something that was always in the blood, or was it something that you sort of found yourself? And was there an early memory that you perhaps recall where you sort of thought, right, football's a sport for me, I'm really keen on this?
No, I was a hockey person. So my pathway was going to be through state hockey. So I was almost drafted into the hockey pathways when I joined high school. I was always pretty athletic, pretty small and nimble, and I loved my hockey. But I saw a notice on the sports board at Applecross High School, which is my high school, and went down and thought, okay, I could give this a crack. Maradona was at his height in those years, and I saw that and thought, that's pretty unique, skillful sport. And I tried it, and it was akin to me, and I chose soccer over hockey, and there we go.
What sort of footballer was a young Penny Tannerhoath when she first started playing in 1983?
Gosh, a pretty nippy one, full of confidence and cockiness. I remember one time I was trying out for the state team, and Sandra Brentnell and Peter Demopoulos were there. I think Sally McPherson might even have been there, and I didn't make that team. And I was so cocky back then, my young self. And they were like, maybe this isn't the right time for you. And I'm like, oh, my God. I was devastated, right? Full of confidence. But that was a junior level. And the next year, I so much wanted to play football. I thought, I'm going to do this better. I'm going to be a better version of myself. I was probably 14 or 15. So I tried out for the state women's soccer team, and there was the likes of Jude Pettit and Sharon Rattlejan playing, the icons of WA football, national players, Matildas. And I made the women's team in 1987, and I was absolutely stoked. I was the youngest player in that team, playing alongside Sharon Rattlejan, which was her retirement year. So that inspired me to just keep on going.
So in terms of, you said you played for the, you got the call up to the state team in 1987, having played in 1983. How much hard work, I suppose, did you have to put yourself through to be able to get to that point?
Well, for me, it was never hard work. I just wanted to play. Melville Alemanni at the time was full of players like Debbie Tumath and Fiona Ellis and Murray Dalwood, Kelly Neal and her sister, who were playing state team in previous years, but were my mentors. I was a young teenager playing in the First Division women's football, and they were in their 20s and awesome footballers, and we were always in the top couple of teams in the division, not forgetting back then there was only one or two divisions and there was no junior football, so it was you'd play in that top tier. So I had great inspiration. I wanted to be playing on the pitch with them, and I was only a sub playing for the state team, but I was playing in a group of awesome footballers. That was enough inspiration for me to work hard.
And having those role models, we speak about it now in the A-League women's competition. There's so many great people in the sport, like your Kim Carrolls, like your Tash Rigbys, who have been pivotal figures at clubs respectively. Who were some of the names that you looked up to and really guided you back in that time as part of your journey when it started?
Do you know, that's so long ago, Tom. We're talking decades before mobile phones and internet and computers, right? So for me to see those role models was zero. So if I didn't see something in a newspaper, and you're talking women's soccer, not football, which is a high chance that I would not see anything because it just was not anywhere, then I would have to be at the game. I would have to be playing my football. I'd have to be where those footballers were. Funny story, I caught up with one of the players that I played football with in the 80s from Melville Alemannia, Jill Syson Gray, and she has a little recording of 1980s of Ascot, one of the first clubs, and she was playing there with Jude Pettit and Sharon Madeljan. Gold, right? This little thing which we've transferred onto a little USB now. So the quality was, you know, one of those big shoulder VHS big machines, right? And she's looking at it going, man, it's doing my head in looking at that. And I'm thinking, this is wonderful. This is archive. This is history. So these players were playing from when I remember, but there's nothing else. What footage is there? What newspaper articles are there? Few and far between. So when you say role models, my role models were who I played with on the park on a Sunday. If I didn't get to that training in that game, I couldn't see my role models in the game. So I absolutely wanted to be there.
And what were some of the words of advice that you did pick up, and what were some of the things that those, I suppose, teachers of the game providing to you at that time when you were sort of making that journey and obviously going on to represent the WA state team?
Well, ethic is a big word for me, and we're talking moral and work. So they just worked hard, and they just said, one day you'll get here too. And not forgetting the age differential and the height differential. I was very little when I first started playing football. I didn't grow until I was 21, so I finished high school and then I grew. So in early photos of me, I was so little, but they welcomed me like mums. So they were my family. So they always took me under their wing and looked after me. They'd take me to the games. They'd take me home from training if I needed to, because of course my mum had other kids in the family. So, you know, they would look after me in the times that my mum couldn't take me to and from. And I earnestly wanted that. They'd come and pick me up and I'd be reading my Phantom comics when they were talking about the FA Cup and the back of the cars to games and pulling out the Phantom comics in the Sunday Times and just being there while they'd go to the pub afterwards, because, you know, I was young, but they'd all go to the pub after games. So these were my role models, and that's what adults did then. They'd play games and they'd party hard, but that was the world that I was in. I never drank, never smoked, they did all of that, by the way. There's some funny stories there, but I won't go there. But they, because they worked hard on the pitch and they came together as a team and they were a winning combination, I saw that and I wanted to be a part of that. And that's part of me too and my ethic.
And I've spoken to some people in the men's game in particular who were part of the Greek and Macedonian communities with their football clubs, and they've sort of told me that back in the 80s and in the early 90s, these were community hubs. These were places where people would go to spend time with friends, to catch up. Was that something that you developed in terms of having that community down at Melville?
Melville Alemannia was associated with the Gashick family. So the Ryan Donau Club on North Lake Road in Melville was pretty much the home of social space for Melville. There'd be Oktoberfest and so forth. Socials, men and women would kind of come together from the club and they would have their social activities there. I was always too young to be a part of that. But that's how they convened. But you've got to remember that women playing football or soccer back then was a totally different space to men. So there would be some clubs that would maybe socialise with the men, and but they wouldn't be in the same kind of way. They wouldn't have the great big shindigs that the men did. It was just different. So growing up, also remembering that I was much younger, growing up I didn't participate in those kind of things and probably didn't know about those social activities as much. And wouldn't be allowed to because I was not yet of legal age. But in my adult life as a footballer or soccer player, I think there was a difference in the ethnic side of things and how they would gather socially for men and women. And that's probably changed a lot more now. But then again, people are so busy now that I'm not quite sure they get together in the same kind of way socially that maybe they would have otherwise. I mean, females playing football is a different world, Tom.
I suppose, obviously, as time has grown, the dynamics have changed a lot. And what we are starting to see now, and it's something that I'm a big fan of as well in terms of covering the MPLW women's competition, is that some of these names from the past and some of these role models that the female players of yesteryear would have looked up to, the likes of Sandra Brett and all the likes of Tracy Wheeler, they've got medals now named in honour of them for various competitions, which we see in the pre-season and the State Cup. And I can sort of see your face smiling a little bit, Penny, because how important is it to sort of connect that history and those names of the past with the modern game and obviously going forward?
Do you know, I think if you asked any of the young footballers now who those players are, they wouldn't know. And I think that's a shame, and that's one of the reasons that I'm so driven to collect all of the memorabilia and history and information in people's heads until there's nothing more to capture and put it in a website and a book, because I think that the Tracy Wheelers and the Sandra Brentnells and the Sharon Maddlejans and the Jude Pettits are essential. They're pioneers of our game. They, without knowing it, they just did what they loved and laid down foundations, structures, and allowed space for it to be safe and okay for others to follow. And the young ones of today who are 12 and 13 playing in their academies and the NTC and girls playing in boys' leagues and whatever, they don't know about that. They just care about playing football because that's their passion. But all this other stuff happened to allow that to happen over time, and they're the pioneers. So it's different now. We remember them, and I'm glad that Football West will honour the player of the match with the Tracy Wheeler medal, and Sandra Brentnell will be invited to the opening of the Sam Kerr Football Centre, and things like that will happen. And I'll facilitate that as much as possible. And one day there will just be spaces at the State Football Centre where they will have maybe a statue or a plaque or something, and they don't need to be invited to things. I'll just be remembered. There will be the legacy there. But there is a disconnect at the moment, and I'm hoping that I can help facilitate the engagement so that young people will know who that is. I think it's important to know who that is, but then they'll be the role models of younger people in another couple of generations, right? So someone like Clara Hawau from Mum FC, who's now breaking into the Perth Glory, she will be the role model for someone else in 15 years' time. And how will that be seen? I don't know. We still have to kind of work the fabric into our football community for those things.
Yes, and it is something which is obviously gradually building, and it is something that will take time, but it's at least good that some of these steps are starting to be taken in that sense. And you mentioned before your work that you're doing sort of with the WA Hall of Fame and that sort of administrative side in terms of collecting information. But we've also seen some things such as museum exhibitions at the Women's World Cup down at the Perth Museum as well, where there was sort of that walkway through the history of women's football as well. So there are some things that are sort of happening in that space. And I suppose, just to reiterate, how important do you feel the speed of that is in terms of just making sure we really align the history with the present?
It's as fast as it needs to be. So if we go too fast, we miss things. If it goes too slow, we miss things. But if we go as fast as it needs to be, then we can hopefully bring other people along with us. We can capture what we need to along the way. And look, women's football has a long way to go before it's at whatever heights we personally want it to be and what the sport needs to be and for professional status needs to be, so that a Tash Rigby can give up a job or her study so that she can be a full-time footballer. But if we jump too fast, where does the money come from? How do we bring people along with the ride? And I really like what Anne O'Dong did with the Women's World Cup campaign, when we said, what are you doing, Anne? Why aren't we just smashing all this information out into the football community 6 months before? And she said, because the community's not ready for it, Pen. We need them to be along with the ride. And this is what the Australian community does. 6 weeks before or 1 month before, we're absolutely going to smash it and we're going to hammer it. And it did. It happened, right? Australia was along for the World Cup ride with the Matildas at the time that Football Australia put their campaign out into the community. It worked. So the time is when the time is ready, Tom.
And in the meantime, there are still people like yourself giving back to the game as well. And you're doing some coaching at the moment. You're still involved with Murdoch University Melville in that capacity as well. Can you tell us a little bit about how long you've been coaching for and how long you've been in that space, passing on those sort of pearls of wisdom to the next generation?
Sure. I love being a role model. I love the energy that is surrounding me as a player, because I still play in Mum FC's League One team as goalkeeper. So I did think that maybe I'd be playing social football at some point at this stage in my life, but I seem to have worked my way back up the leagues. But that brings with it a lot of energy and a lot of talent in front of me. And on the coaching side, I didn't ever think I'd be a coach, to be honest. But I worked hard to engage with people. Like Taki Nicolaides was at Mum FC a few years back, and he was an awesome coaching mentor for me. I just could ask him questions. He'd sit down with me and work through different session plans and ideas. And Rod Banjak was fantastic. So different people that I've connected with through the club and through the radio program have been willing to sit down and help with my coaching journey and the transition. Well, what I thought it was going to be a transition completely from playing into coaching, but it's kind of run side by side. This year I'm helping out with 16s at the club, but I'm also, I think my role is a mentor and role model at club level. Don't forget my age, I'm over 40, right? So there's a couple of decades of difference between me playing and the other players on the pitch. So I've been playing for so long and been playing at so many levels, I've got the benefit of experience and wisdom that I can offer to those young things as they're learning their craft. And I love that. And it might be coaching, or it might just be being a mentor around the club, because I am always around. People can come and ask me because I know how things work, and I've got the experience of playing at different levels. So I know the pathways. If a parent comes with their young daughter and says, what do you think about this, Pen, or where can I go for this, or what's the pathway for that? And I can help them because I just know it, because I've been around. Love it.
Can you tell us a little bit about the growth of female participation at the junior level and how you've seen those numbers rise in the past decade?
Yes, it's just incredible. So from when I first started playing in the 80s, there was no junior football. There was school football. That was, and Peter Rickers is a great advocate in that space. He's also documenting the history of school sports. There was growth through the 90s when Women's Soccer Western Australia was led by a group of very dedicated females such as Jeanette Spencer and Sandra Shopsky and Kerry Harris. They instigated primary schools programs at Gibney Reserve as the home base. And the forerunner for the National Training Centre, which was a high-performance centre, and the likes of Tal Karp and Colette McCullum and Lisa Devanna went through those kind of spaces. And it grew. Through the 90s and 2000s, it really grew. But now you've got kids playing in academy programs as girls' teams in boys' leagues, and you've got the NTC, and they're sponsored by Hyundai, and it's just grown such an incredible amount. And Justine Bonzas was a real inspiration, I think. Once she finished playing football, she went into coaching with the NTC, and she was also involved with Safety Bay in the school soccer program there. And she gave a lot over and above to developing football in terms of putting her time into the NTC, identifying players, bringing them into programs. She was in that space for, I don't know, probably 10 years or so. And then now she's moved out of that space. And you were talking about, you know, the role models and the heroes, so to speak. We don't talk about it much in women's football, not here in Western Australia. I could guarantee if you spoke to someone that's been playing football for 10 years, and that might be a junior who started when they're 5 and they're 15, they couldn't tell you a West Australian hero. I guarantee they couldn't. So that space has got to change, but it will change over time.
And how important is the retention of those people in the game as well? Because we see it so often where players will have their playing careers and they'll be heavily involved and invested in the game at a playing level. And then in some cases, people have families, people just move on. They have other careers, they have other things they want to do in their life. But how important is it to keep those people who have that experience in playing the game into roles down the line in terms of coaching, also administrative, referees, all of these ways in which you build that football narrative from that young age of playing all the way through until you're in your older years?
Well, it's super, super, super important. And a large part of that is when you're playing at a club, how does the club connect? So are they so big that they have three grounds and all the girls and women's teams play alongside junior boys teams and men's teams at different places, so they don't see the rest of the club? They don't know that there's a pathway. Or is there one club, one ground, and everybody plays at the same place, so they visually can see all the other players? And then there's a technical director for the women and there's a technical director for the men, so they cross over and they connect and they help foster. Then these are all things that help retain, because they give you a feeling of safety and confidence that there are things there for you, that there are resources there for you, that the club is building things for you, so you want to be a part of it. This is all part of the growing thing, right? Tash Rigby is probably one of the role models in West Australia that young kids would recognise. But if you have a young player at a club, could they know who the older players playing in an NPL team are, or an older women's team? Probably not. And that's something we have to grow into, but NPL is only young, right? Like 4 or 5 years old here in women's football anyway. So we'll work on that with people like yourself going and match calling and having male and female competitions already in your conversation when you go and have a conversation with someone else, which is fantastic. That hasn't happened for so long. And I love that I can have a conversation and I don't need to define men or women. We just talk football and it could be the men or the women. So there's a lot of work to do. I keep saying that. There's so much work to do. But it also says that the growth is happening. Like, there is this space that we can move into, that there's so much work to do, which is just naturally growing. We're naturally doing all of that work.
That'll do us for part one. We'll be back with a little look at Penny's stint on the radio and some bigger picture things shortly.
Casual Football Chats is a partnership between the Perth Football Podcast and the Casual Football Company. Casual Football Company run 25 casual games a week at venues across the entire metropolitan area. Casuals lets you rock up, play 90 minutes of non-stop football for $15 reduce. There are no referees and no one keeps scores. It's not the World Cup final, which means that you can have a nice casual game with your friends, with mates, or with strangers. Games are played simply for the love of the game. All players are welcome. Check them out on Casual Football on all social media places that you can find them. They also have an app that you can get on iTunes or on Google Play Store. And remember, hashtag play because you love it and hashtag keep things casual.
Welcome back to part two of our Casual Football Chats series and our episode with Penny Tanner-Hoth. So, Penny, you've also had a long stint on the radio on the World Football Program, 107.9 FM. We've actually just come off the air from doing a show this morning together. Tell us about your involvement on the radio, how that all started, and what drives you to keep doing it 30 years later.
1987 was the year that the station started, and there was a sports program. And names like Graham Normanton, which you might know, and John O'Connell have been involved along the way back in those early years, helping get the programs up and running. And I came in when Martin Wells, the Saturday morning soccer show host, was down in the old dungeons on Canning Highway. That was the first station down a little, very steep, winding set of chairs down into a dungeon that had only space for a couple of people in it. They called it the dungeon because I think it was actually a dungeon. And I loved it. I was absolutely scared, poopless, on my first time I was in there and that I went on radio. But Martin saw something in me when I was starting out my state team journey, and I actually have no idea how he contacted me, how he got my number, but I was keen to do it, maybe because I was the youngest player in the team at the time, and I was happy to have a chat. As you know, I like to talk, and that was the start. I just did some here and there kind of chats on the radio. He would give me a call, I'd give an update on how league was going here and there, or state team was going here or there, and then I eventually got called into the studio, and joined him, and one day he's like, "Penn, I'm retiring and it's all yours." So off he went, and I'm like, "Oh my God, really?" As in, ah! So that became the World Football Program. That was his legacy, and that was in the 90s. And so many decades later, I don't know, 36, 37 years now, here we are. And we have an awesome team, by the way. So it's not just about me. It's about the Shauns and the Hughes and the Peets. It's everybody. Look, there's even Tony Carvajal has been involved from school sports. There's been many great hosts over the years, and there's so much about football now, right? So it's not just about women's football or women's soccer or junior football or school soccer or men's state league. It's about everything. It's diverse and it's inclusive, and there's so much to talk about, so much. And I just love it. And for me, it's not about talking about myself or women's football. It's about whatever is on the news that we can talk. We'll just cram into a two-hour show. And it's world football, right? So it can go on forever. Like, there'll be someone to talk football at some point.
Who have been some of your favourite guests and people that you've spoken to over the years?
Oh, that's really easy. We talked to Robbie Fowler when he first came to Australia. That was a pretty cool interview. We did that with John O'Connell. He was on Info Radio at the time. And we had a very long interview there. And Les Murray, before he passed on, that he was great on radio. And it was good because he'd been involved in media at SBS for so long. We were able to talk to him about the changes in TV and how, you know, there was no computers and mobile phones when he started, and then he had to learn how to upskill himself and present on TV. So that they were definitely two highlights. But yeah, having Anne O'Don on and people like Heather Reid, who've had also had a long journey in football, Tom Samani, former Matildas coach, and Alan Stadjic, and Sam Kerr started out with probably her first interview here when she was a teenager because she lives just down the road, right? And Anne O'Don, who was also with me in her early years of media, was in the studio for a few years, and she's like, "Let's get Sam on. We know Sam, we can get her in." So we did, and Sam, like Tash Rigby said on the radio, she took over from a global superstar as captain of Perth Glory, and that was Sam Kerr, and she's following in her footsteps, so to speak, but doing a great job as captain herself now. So, yeah, we've had some pretty amazing people in the studio.
What were those early memories of Sam like when she did come in the studio for that interview?
Well, she wasn't the thoroughbred-looking type that she is now. She is a lean, mean machine now, and she was a bit smaller and a little bit giggly and had a mum escorting her in. So very, very different to the polished performer that she is now, that's for sure. But what a journey it's been. And it's good to see that, right? To be at the beginning and then somewhere down the track in someone's journey. And getting a hold of Sam is amazing. You have to go through an agent and it just doesn't happen these days. So maybe when she retires and she's coming back here in a multi-million dollar property, we'll get her back in the studio, hopefully, and have a talk about the journey that she's had. But they're the kind of things that I love reflecting on and talking about and being a part of. Tom Samani was the Matildas coach, and he's been coaching professional in America, and then he was with the Canadian team and Matildas, and now he's back with Western Sydney Wanderers. So that kind of journey is amazing. And when I was on the edge of the Matildas squad back in the mid-90s, he was the coach. So I'd go into camp and he'd be my coach. And so out of that was a good connection for radio. I'm like, I can make use of him. He talks really well. Let's get him on the radio. So years later, we're still keeping in contact and he comes and had a chat on the radio. So these are the kind of things that, you know, many, many decades of being involved in football can capture these kind of contacts to get him in on the radio.
Yeah, and how fulfilling is it to see those journeys develop? Obviously, you mentioned Anne before, who was a heavy part of the show, I remember. And you've had people like Teo Pelizzeri as well, who came on when they were a lot younger and they were just coming on and talking about the game that they love, and now they've progressed to go on to great careers in the media. And that must fill you with a lot of joy to see those people go on those journeys and really sort of fulfill their roles and positions in the media contributing to the game.
Yes, I'm not quite sure what the word is to describe that, Tom, but it makes me happy I to be a part of that. And Simon Hill started off in SBS many, many, many decades ago, and I consider him the number one football commentator in Australia. Robbie Thompson's pretty close, though. I like Robbie. We have a good chat on the radio. Hi, Robbie. They talk different football, and Robbie can get across anything, and he's happy to have a chat with us as a professional football commentator talking to a volunteer community radio show. I feel very chuffed. I feel like, well, we've clearly done something right over all these years, only being volunteers, that someone who's gone through this journey and is now professional something and has plied their craft at the very top level still wants to talk to volunteer on a community radio show. I'm just simply chuffed at that.
Have you ever had any difficult interviews? Has there been anybody who's surprised you a little bit?
Hell yes, absolutely. Not too often, though. I have developed a process when I have a guest on, and I've hopefully encouraged my co-host to do exactly the same so that we don't have too many challenging moments. What you don't want on live radio is, because you can't use a dump button or
edit. Scripts it.
Yeah, that's it. You can't do that. Is we just need to make sure that whoever's going to come on has a good radio voice, they have a good air about them, and they can fill the spaces. No spaces in radio. Cannot do it. So my process is to reach out, leave a message, get them to call me back, have a conversation. And if that's easy for them and it sounds really pleasing to my ear, then they are on. And Tom Samani fills the bill in so many ways with that. You just open your mouth and say, hi, Tom, and he's off, right? Robbie Thompson is exactly the same. And they're the kind of people that you want on radio, that they fill with great news and content. So really challenging, only a couple, and really far back in my early years.
Throwing forward a little bit now to the present day, and I suppose to the past 12 to 18 months, one of the probably the biggest things ever was the FIFA Women's World Cup last year. And obviously it was such a fantastic event. It was a real festival of football. And you're wearing your volunteer shirt today, Penny, as we sit here doing this interview. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences being involved with the Women's World Cup in that capacity?
Yes, 2023 was such an exciting year. I had been collecting material for my second book, which my first one I published in 1991. So I sat down with the state library and they wanted some of my material to work with that exhibition that you'd been talking about to have at the front of the library, which is incredible because so much of the public could see that and so many people came through that. And I remember going there one day when that exhibition was up and seeing this like life-size big poster of Sandra Brentnell and Julie Clayton and so forth, and thinking, this is incredible. This is the world of football in my city. And I never thought there'd be a World Cup, like right here. I've never travelled to a World Cup before, so having it on my doorstep was incredible. So, of course, I was going to volunteer. I'm in. Just say the word, and before you can finish the word, I'm in. Mm-hmm. But just to raise the awareness of women's football in our city and to people in our Perth community, that was great. So it wasn't as much as I thought it would be. There wasn't banners on every street. There wasn't posters and billboards everywhere, but it raised the level of awareness. And for me, I jumped on that and I thought, okay, there's people coming out of the woodwork and everyone's talking about women's soccer and women's football. I'm going to get as much history and memorabilia as I can. And I'm going to make sure that it's turned over to the State Library and the State Museum because, Tom, they had nothing. So they came to me and I'm like, sure, you can have access to everything I've got. I've got trophies and boxes and I've got rooms full of information. And I wanted to give it to someone. And in that World Cup year is the year we need to share it, right? So for me, as this is my historian side coming out, you know, working with as many people who just have memories in their heads, Sandra Brentnells and Tracy Wheelers and other people from the 70s, who don't have anything because they threw it all out, never knowing that we'd get a World Cup in our own city and that world women's, you know, soccer would be at the level that it was in 2023. They didn't keep it anymore. Some people just didn't know. They threw it out. So I have to go back to people and pull it out of their mind and talk the stories. So 2023 was a year of remembrance and a year of rebranding of women's football, women's soccer into women's football. I love that. I absolutely love that. Do you hear how excited I am? I just, whew, it was a year.
Did you ever sort of get a chance to sit back and just sort of look at the pitch, the quality of the grass, the people in the stands, the colour, the noise, the atmosphere, and almost sort of take a deep breath and go, whoa, this is incredible. Can you sort of describe your feelings when you did perhaps have that moment?
So two moments. There was the Ireland game when HBF, the rectangular stadium, was totally packed and it was peeing down with rain. Oh. And I was volunteering on that night, sitting behind one of the goals, and we had these bright orange waterproof stuff that we would wear. And one of the jackets that FIFA gave us was massive. It came down mid-calf. So I had that on and I had a roll of chucks and paper, and my job was to provide it to the photographers to wipe all of their glass lenses so they could keep doing whatever they needed to do. So anyone who had that job was freezing, so we had to rotate the job. I had it for one whole half. So I was sitting there and the stadium was full and I could hear everyone shouting and chanting and everything. It was incredible at HBF Park, rectangular stadium. So I was there huddled up on my seat with my feet drawn under me with a roll of chucks and my hood over me. And I hated that part of it. But on the other hand, it was a full stadium. And the Matildas played there back in 2013 or 17 against Thailand or Bangladesh, I can't remember, but there was like five people in the stadium. And here was an international match, women's soccer football match, filled. So that was definitely one moment. That was whew. And then the second moment was, instead of doing one of my volunteer shifts, I had the opportunity, thank you Football West, as a guest in one of the games. So I was in a VIP box and watching, I can't remember, might have been the Panama game. Again, full stadium, and it was Colombia.
Morocco versus Colombia, was it?
It might have been that one. And there was just so many different people, flags and waving and just the multicultural diversity. It just blew my mind, right? It was full and everyone was in harmony. It was just loving being there. And I was up there in the box thinking, this is actually pretty cool. I'm a guest watching a sellout crowd of women's soccer. Like, how good is that in the lifetime and in such a short space of time when you consider how far we've been playing football in Western Australia?
And two neutral teams as well.
It was crazy. Love it. Bring it on. More, please.
Yeah, it was phenomenal to go to those games. And I think a lot of people really caught the bug. And diehard football fans were always going to go to that first game that was in Perth. But I think that once a couple of my friends who are more sort of AFL and your basketball people, they came along to sort of just experience a tournament and just to experience going. And once they went to that first game, Denmark versus China off the top of my head on the Saturday night, they were straight on the internet the following day looking for tickets for the next four games, just wanting to sample it and knowing that this was such a special thing and wanting to just be a part of it for as long as possible. Did you sort of feel that cutthroat was happening as well?
Oh, 100% I did. The Forest Place Volunteer Centre, where they were televising games and there was a bit of pre-match entertainment and so forth, there was people waiting to get in right down the mall. Like, I don't know how many, but I couldn't count them, right back to the road. I wouldn't have expected that. Like, I rocked up as a volunteer so I could get in, but there was people waiting to get in just to be in that space, to be near other people who also wanted to get in. So the atmosphere that was created was absolutely incredible. It's blown my mind. And what I want, Tom, what I absolutely want from Perth is I want more games here like that, and I want more of the community to get together and gather like that, because I can't think of any problems, any challenges that it created. It just created a whole lot of people getting together because they loved being in that atmosphere. And didn't it show us that we can do it again? Like, what is the problem? Why can't we do it again and again and again?
And that's obviously been such a big part of the profile of the women's game growing as a whole. Not only is it major tournaments, but it's also investment in the game, not necessarily in Australia as much as we like. We'd always like more investment, but there's competitions such as the WSL in England. Obviously, the NWSL in America has been a competition which has really been a sort of trailblazer of women's club football, in a sense. The W League before that as well. You just have to think of some of the names that have sort of come through there and that are now applying their trade both overseas and at a national level as well. How have you seen that progression of the women's game unfold as perhaps the profile of the game around the world has lifted and the investment in certain areas has grown?
I did a profile on Sarah King, who is a former Matilda, played back in the 80s and 90s. And she's just been recognised with a Matilda's cap. And there's a couple of West Australian players, probably a couple of players Australia-wide, who are still being recognised for the Matilda's caps, which is just saying that Football Australia going right back into history now and recognising everybody that was involved. Getting a cap now is pretty damn amazing, right? You know when someone is going to get a cap because it splashed all across the media. Everybody will know. But way back then, no internet, no computers, no, the network wasn't the same. So it was written down on a piece of paper, and that piece of paper was probably thrown out or transitioned when an office was changed. More males than females back then in Football Australia, all those kind of things. So what I'm saying is the attention on football now is very different. So Americans would come and play here in the off season. Now they're finding it harder to do that because we have a longer season.
And more players taking those places
yes,
locally.
That's right. So getting back to Sarah King, she played for Arsenal way back in the 80s and 90s before they were professional. But she went there looking for professional football. So she won I think it was the London Cup and was at the Emirates Stadium. Before the men Arsenal played Newcastle, there was 40,000 people in the stadium. Yeah. How cool is that? Way back then. But do we know about that? Not until I write about it. Why? So there's lots of benchmark moments that have happened, but not everybody knows about them.
And now they're becoming the norm because we're seeing Arsenal getting 60,000 for Champions League games. And it's not even a new story now because it's starting to become the norm, which is what we like to see.
Yeah. We like to have these conversations and I sit back and I twiddle my thumbs and I listen to these conversations and I might be at the State Football Centre or at a random ground and I'm hearing conversations about this and I'm just got a little smile of contentment on my face because I'm happy that those conversations are now happening and more we're talking about the Sarah Kings and the Sandra Brentnells and so forth as a normal part of a conversation and a normal part of our history that's being recognised. Never going to forget the history going forward. Otherwise, there's a disconnect somewhere. We've got to remember that we came from somewhere to get to that place we're now at.
So just to sort of wrap on our chat today, Penny, how do you see the trajectory of the women's game going? Are we on the right path? There's obviously still a lot of work to do, but we've got a lot of participation now in the junior space. We've got girls coming through programs and academies now and stepping up and playing A-League minutes and furthermore going overseas, taking on opportunities in the college system in America, various things. How do you see the overall development of the women's game here? Do you feel we're on the right path to being where we want to be eventually?
Yes, I do. And it still comes back to we have to – merit will see us where we need to be. Hard work will see us and it'll happen when we're ready. And we just have to keep doing what we're doing. Honestly, I don't think there's going to be a particular moment where we'll go, we're there now. And the Women's World Cup here in Australia was a game changer for us. The media team at Football Australia did an amazing job there. And it's probably filling a lot of coffers too. I mean, filling out stadiums every time, come on. You've got to pat women's football on the back, right? That whatever has been done, we're now creating a revenue stream and encouraging sponsors to want to jump into the space where 12 months before that, you could not probably name the sponsors or not be sure about things, but we can be damn sure now that the Matildas have a game, you're going to fill out that stadium. And that's consistency, right? So consistency leads to we can now plan. So we can plan to do more things and different things that are going to grow into the space that we didn't have as a base before. So I'm happy we're going in the right direction. Absolutely 100%. Is there more space to grow into? Absolutely 100%.
Always is.
Oh, look, from where I've come from and playing 40 years or 50 years ago, whatever it was, to where we're going to get to, I'm going to live till I'm 100. And now I've got internet and a mobile phone and a computer. Can you imagine what I'm going to be seeing when I'm 100? I might be in a wheelchair and I'll have the TV up on my screen because, you know, I've got to lay in my bed because I can't move, can't play football anymore, but I can still press a button and I can watch women's football on that TV screen, Tom. How cool will that be?
Absolutely fantastic. And yeah, obviously full home and away season now in the A-League women's competition as well. And just in general, the pathways seem to be growing and expanding as more investment comes into the game through broadcast revenues, more sponsors, as you say. They're seeing these packed stadiums now for these internationals and for these club games. And they're thinking, geez, we want a piece of that. We don't want to miss out. So they're getting involved as well. And it's certainly on the right path. And yeah, my time covering the women's game hasn't been as long and as durable as yours, Penny. I'm relatively new to the space myself, but I think I can speak on behalf of a lot of people when they sort of look at you as someone who's been a real pioneer in WA football here, Penny. So thank you for your time today. Is there anything that you want to plug quickly before we go in terms of your website that you're doing some work for and any ways in which people can view some of the history here in WA local football?
Absolutely. I am collecting any memories and any memorabilia that will fill in all the spaces for women's soccer and women's football history. And when there's nothing more to collect, my job is done. And womensoccer.com.au is the website, which will eventually be a book. Nick Templeman, Miranda Templeman's dad, has been helping me with that. He's been super awesome. I simply will just keep doing all of what I'm doing because I love it and because there's so much information and news to share. Bring it all on.
Thanks, Penny. We could have probably spoken for another couple of hours, but both got things to do later today. So thanks for joining me today. Been greatly appreciated.
That's fantastic to be on the other end of a microphone.
And that's it for another episode of our casual football chat series. Remember, Perth Football Podcast. You can like us, share us, rate us, review us. Google, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, any comments, any likes, any reviews, does us a massive favour, helps us to grow the profile of the pod and keep bringing you interviews like this and reaction to the men's and women's game locally here in WA. You can catch us for a full-time whistle and also for a flagship pod on a Monday. But for now, from myself, Tommy Dolman, it's goodbye and we'll see you around the grounds.